hit Genesis chapter 13, I want to share some details from a wonderful little story about Abraham, but it involves his nephew, a guy named Lot, or Lot, depending on how you pronounce the Hebrew. We're going to talk about leaving home and how you can go back home. At the beginning of the Torah portion, actually what David read from in Hebrew just moments ago, was in chapter 12. God said to Abraham, literally, get going, get out. That's literally the kind of imperative that God used. Leave your home, leave the place where you were born, your birthplace, and leave your father's house, and go to a land that I'll show you when you get there. And so we're told, though, just a few verses later, that Abraham is accompanied by his wife. They're childless. They don't have a child. And they are also accompanied by Abraham's nephew, Lot. He's fatherless. His father has died. We learn back in Genesis chapter 11. And together, the three of them set out on this journey. Lot has accompanied his uncle through the trip down to Egypt and back. Actually, Jewish tradition applauds Lot for not giving away the secret that Sarah was really Abraham's wife when the Egyptians came along to abduct her and kidnap her. Lot worked to protect Abraham and Sarah because he knew the real secret. However, when we come to chapter 13, the stories begin to change, and there's a shift, and there's a separation, even among family members. Picking up in verse 5, it says, "Now Lot, who went with Avram, also had flocks and herds and tents." It's interesting that in the ancient Near East, as much as gold and silver, they counted wealth by their herds, by the quantity of their camels and their oxen and their donkeys. And we learned that Lot has also, after coming out of Egypt, become very wealthy, just as wealthy as and as in possession as his uncle Abraham. And it says, "And the land could not sustain them while they were dwelling together, for their possessions were so great they were not able to," again, "stay together." Twice in that verse, we have this little phrase, "Lashevet yachdav." Do any of you, I won't ask you to sing a solo, but do you guys remember the Jewish folk song, "Hinei Matov"? It's based on Psalm 133. "Hinei Matov Umanaim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. Hinei Matov Umanaim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad." And then there's another fast version. "Hinei Matov Umanaim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad." It's the first verse of Psalm 133. The verse says, as well as that Jewish folk song, how good and beautiful it is when brothers dwell together. The idea is that they dwell even in unity. And the Hebrew there is shevet yachdav. Shevet is to, not to just be overly technical, but shevet is the infinitive form of the Hebrew verb to sit down, or sometimes translated to live or to dwell. And yachdav is the word together. So how good it is when brothers dwell, sit, live together in unity. Besides that passage in Psalm 133, that verb together in the infinitive, that verb together with the word together, yachdav, occurs in only two other places. And they're both stories in Genesis. One of them is here in chapter 13 with Abraham and his nephew Lot. The other is in Genesis chapter 36, dealing with two other brothers named Jacob and Esau. These would be Abraham's grandsons, years later. They also find that they cannot shevet, la shevet yachdav. They are not also not able to live together. And so in Genesis, you have two stories of brothers. Although Abraham and Lot are not brothers, down in verse 8, Abraham actually calls Lot his brother, though he's actually his nephew. In verse 8, Abraham actually uses the term achim, anachnu achim, we are brothers. And so, interestingly, in Genesis, in two places, you have brothers who can't stay together. And I think that's why it's so amazing that then King David or someone many centuries later wrote Psalm 133 that says how beautiful it is when brothers can actually live together. And it suddenly makes sense to us the importance of that verse in Psalm 133. Suddenly we understand why it is so good and why it is so beautiful and pleasant when brothers can dwell together in unity. Because in the Bible, using that phrase, shevet achim yachdav, it's never happened before. That's why it's so beautiful when it actually can. I have such a new appreciation for that Jewish folk song now, after I kind of discovered this actually just this week. So it says they have too many herds, too many possessions for them to shevet yachdav, to stay and live together. And then verse 7 goes on to say, and there was strife between the herdsmen of Abraham and the herdsmen, the shepherds of Lot. Actually, these guys evidently have their own ranchers. They have their own ranch crew. And it seems like ranch crew A isn't getting along with ranch crew B, or in this case, L for Lot. And so there's contention. Again, according to Jewish tradition, this is actually where the problem started, why they had to separate, is because there was bickering and argument among their shepherds. Just a passing point. based on this. Be careful, in this case, who your employees are. If your employees can't get along with each other, they'll end up causing problems for you and the other co-owner. So, you know, that's the ethics, I guess, of Genesis 13. So here, Lot and Abraham's employees, their ranch hands, can't get along. So Abraham said in verse 8, "Please don't let there be any strife between you and me, and between my ranch hands and your ranch hands. For we are brothers." Anachnu Achim. He first says, don't let there be any strife between you and me. Don't let what's going on with them impact our relationship. The word there for strife is significant. The word is meriva. And that's significant because later, centuries later, when Israel comes out of Egypt and they're on their 40-year camp out between Egypt and the land that God had promised, at one point they start having some strife. And it's the same word, meriva. It's kind of like, do you see how the lives of the patriarchs end up reflecting the lives of their descendants? The story stays the same from parents to kids to grandkids to generations later. You know, the same stuff comes around. Abraham says, don't let there be any of this contention between you and me. After all, we're brothers. That's the end of verse 8. And Lot doesn't say anything. I wished he would have said, that's right. What can we do to work together to overcome this obstacle? Unfortunately, Lot didn't say anything. And so Abraham continues in verse 9. This time he asks a question. He said, isn't the whole land right here in front of you? You know, really, really, we have a lot of land here. I see this. Abraham has shifted from first being trying to implore him relationally, and now he's shifting to practical. Let me lay something out practically. You know, all the land is here, and it's all before you. And there's, in other words, there's really more than you think there is. And so, again, Lot doesn't say anything. He doesn't answer Abraham at all. And so finally, Abraham says, please separate from me. If you go to the left, then I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, I'll go to the left. The third and finally, Abraham says, okay, separate from me. And he throws out this radical idea. I mean, just back up in verse 5, in the Hebrew it says that Lot imo, Lot was with Abraham. And now Abraham throws out this radical idea, okay, if you don't want to be with me, then just go take off. Unfortunately, that's what Lot responds to. There were three times, Jewish tradition has this idea, three times you challenge somebody to bring them back from their wrongdoing. You see it in the story of Naomi and Ruth. Three times Naomi tried to convince Orpah and Ruth to go back to their land. And after challenge number two, one of them does turn around and leave. But after challenge number three, Ruth says, "Don't make me leave you. I want to cling to you." It's that those same words that we see in the Genesis story of husband and wife. The man will leave his mother and father and cling to his wife. Leave and cleave. And so those same words show up in Ruth's story. Don't make me leave. I want to hold on. I want to follow you. In the Greek, it uses the idiom to follow after, just like Messiah would come and say, "Follow me." Ruth says, "I want to follow you." By the way, in Paul's literature, Rabbi Paul says, "Correct somebody three times." The same three-time thing. Correct somebody three times. Messiah, in the story of congregational discipline, there is also the three-time. Three times you go through a process. So here, Abraham did the three-time thing, the three statements of trying to reconcile. First, why should there be strife between us? And second, we have a lot of space here. And then thirdly, you're just laying it out to this, you've been with me, but if you really want to separate, go for it. It says that Lot lifted his eyes and he saw the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered. Man, it's not like that rocky hill country. Somebody in our congregation is in Israel right now. Someone else in our congregation is leaving for Israel next month. And then next spring, there's a couple guys in our congregation going to Israel. And they'll see when they're there that the mountains down the middle of Israel, oh man, Laura, man, they're the rockiest farmland in the world. First of all, who can farm very well on mountainsides? So
you can have goats, that's it.
You have goats, and that's it. What they do is they build terraces on the mountainsides in modern-day Israel. But still, man, the soil is so rocky. And they didn't know how to build those rock fences back then, maybe, like they do here in Kentucky. I don't know.
They learned that in Britain.
Okay. And so Lot looks up and he sees the valley down in the Jordan, and it's so lush and green and watered so nicely. He says, "I'll take the valley." And it says that Lot separates himself from Abraham. They separated from each other at the end of verse 11. The Hebrew there is actually so sad. The Hebrew actually says, the one man separated from his brother. Again, it uses the term brother in the Hebrew. And so they separated from each other, but literally it's the parting of families. No more Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. No more living together, even in unity. And it ends up that, amazingly, in Lot's story, he doesn't end up living in the valley that he thinks is so lush. if you keep reading, you find out that he actually moves his tent over close to a city called Sodom. He's kind of like living in the suburbs of Sodom. But then if you keep reading, it's in next week's Torah portion. In chapter 19, you find out that he's not living in the valley of the Jordan, and he's not pitched his tent anymore near Sodom. You find out he's living in Sodom. Talk about a three-step downhill, which is, well, that's what he did when he went from the mountains down into the valley. The Jordan Valley, by the way, there by the Dead Sea, is the lowest spot on the earth. You can't go geographically any lower than where Sodom was at. He went from the valley to the suburbs to the middle of this city that God is ultimately going to destroy. But that's next week's Torah portion. So this is a story of leaving home. This is a story of not only did Abraham leave his father's house, not only did Abraham leave the place he was born, Lot did too. Several times it talks about how Lot is with Abraham. So what Abraham did in chapters 12 and 13, Lot was right there. Lot left his father's house also. Lot left the place of his birth and walked on that walk of trust and that walk of following the Most High, listening to God's voice, being sensitive. God, am I in the right spot yet? Is this where I was supposed to, is this the land I was going to? Nope, not yet. Keep going. That journey of being sensitive to God's Spirit. Lot was right there with Abraham until their ranch hands started arguing, and then they couldn't deal with it among themselves. They let their stuff get in the way. And so there's this awful word, separated, that occurs three times in Genesis 13. That Hebrew word also occurs in Proverbs chapter 18, verse 1. It says that through a person's desire, or a person's desire will separate, in Hebrew using the same verb, a person's desire will separate him and will divide close friends. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 1. I think that had to have been written because, or in light of, the Lot and Abraham story. A person's desire will separate close friends. I know that's a downer, but I want to turn this around, and I want to shoot literally back up the mountain. Okay? Quick segue. If you don't know the intervening story, Lot ends up moving next to Sodom and then into Sodom, and then God's going to destroy the city. Lot ends up in the process. By the way, he evidently married a girl in Sodom. To this point, it's not mentioned that he had a wife. But then in chapter 19, it's suddenly talking about a wife that Lot has. So evidently, he married a Sodi girl, and a girl from Sodom. I didn't want to say it that way, but that's So he married a local, and of course we later see that story where she turns around and looks back, and in the nitrous oxide, you know, alkaline, whatever is going on, she's like instantly crystallized. Josephus, the Jewish historian, by the way, says that he claims that he's seen Lot's wife in his writing. I'll give you the reference if you want to look it up. It's kind of wild. He claims to have seen Lot's wife turned into Saul. He loses children. They're reading between the lines. You learn that he has other children besides the two daughters. You also learn that the daughters had husbands because it mentions sons-in-law. And so Lot loses a bunch of family. All he's left with is his two daughters. There's this awful story of incest where each of them have a child. And one of them names their child Moab, which is maybe kind of benign in English, but if you understand the Hebrew behind Moab, I feel really sorry for that kid. It's not a pretty name. And so this is where we get the Moabites, who were Israel's neighbors on the other side of the Dead Sea. And they most usually have an antagonistic relationship with their Jewish cousins. But there's this beautiful story that it's going to take us back up the mountain. Usually the Moabites are antagonistic with Israel, but there is one story in the Bible of a person from Moab who has a change of heart. Do you know what story that is? The story of Ruth. That's right. Ruth is a descendant of Lot. She is living there in Moab, and she meets a Jewish lady named Naomi, Miss Pleasant. So is her name. Miss Pleasant. Naomi, that's what it means. But Miss Pleasant's life has gotten really bitter. And so her husband's died. She's lost sons. It's kind of like Lot, you know. Lot lost everything. Naomi has lost everything. And so Naomi, the only thing she can think of that she can do is, I just want to go home, back to Tara. Oh, no, sorry, that's Gone with the Wind. Back to Bethlehem, back to Bethlehem. I just had to stick that in, you know, that scene where the girl in Gone with the Wind, she's lost everything. It's like, what am I going to do? And he's like, I'll go back to Tara. And that's what Naomi does. She says, I'm going to go back to Bethlehem. And except she's like so depressed, she doesn't want her daughter-in-laws with her, you know. In this case, misery didn't want company. But Ruth says, you're not going to make me leave. I'm going to cling to you. That leave and cleave thing going on there. It's a marriage, essentially, that she promises. She says, your people will be my people, she says to Naomi. Okay. So she does. She goes back to Bethlehem. Bethlehem is back up in those mountains, right? Bethlehem is about 5 miles from Jerusalem. And so it's back up on that central mountain ridge. a Moabite, a descendant of Lot. Lot left the mountain and went down to a life of separation from Abraham and Abraham's descendants. But Ruth turns around and retraces her ancestors' footsteps back up the mountaintop, near the same place where Lot had left, which was at a place between Ai and Bethel, which is just a few miles north of Jerusalem, the other direction. So there Ruth goes to work. Naomi has sent her out to collect some food, and she finds her way to the field of one named Boaz. And Boaz comes in and has a conversation with her, gets acquainted, and then some of his farm hands, his ranch hands, are going, "So who is this girl?" And they said, "Haven't you heard how she left her mother and her father and the place of her birth to come here with Naomi?" This is in Ruth chapter 2, verse 11. This is really cool. Others recognize that Ruth has left mother and father in order to follow Naomi. And it even mentions that she left the place of her birth. The place of her birth is a single word in Hebrew. Hebrew smashes all the prepositions and pronouns all together in one word. It's the exact same word that's used of Abraham in chapter 12 of Genesis when it says, when God says, "Leave your father's house and the place of your birth." It repeats this for Ruth in Ruth chapter 2. They say to Boaz, "Don't you know she left her father's house and the place of her birth?" Ruth becomes like a new Abraham, or at least like a new Lot, who left with Abraham. Ruth walks the journey back. Lot took a journey down the mountain to the valley. Ruth, well, actually Moab is up in the mountains on the other side, but Ruth made that journey back, leaving her father's house, leaving her possessions behind, leaving the place of her birth, just as Abraham had done. Ruth is like a new Abraham, and it's so beautiful that despite the fact that maybe like Lot, we've you know, separated ourselves, and we're no longer following, we're no longer walking with God's people the way that we should, Ruth gives us a beautiful story of one who makes that journey back. Ruth provides the example of how to reverse what Lot did. Ruth is the inverse story of Genesis 13. Someone who a Moabite, a descendant of Lot, who left mother and father in order to follow Naomi and once again join the descendants of Abraham. It's so beautiful. One final point. Messiah, Yeshua, tells a story. In fact, I don't think it's a story. I think it's presented as actually not a story, but there was an occurrence. There was a man who's called a ruler. He was rich and he was young, that came to Yeshua and said, "What do I have to do to have this kind of life that you're speaking of?" And Yeshua sensed that it was his possessions that were keeping him away from a full-hearted engagement with the Most High. So Yeshua said, "Sell your possessions and come follow me." There's that wedding language again. Leave and cleave. Come follow me. And it says that the man went away sad because he had great possessions. Probably lots of flocks and herds and tents like Lot. Could Yeshua, could that story in Matthew and Mark be reflecting the Lot story about a rich guy that couldn't follow, couldn't do it anymore because of strife and because of possessions? In response to this, Peter says, "Messiah, we've left everything for you. We've left," and get the language, "we've left our fathers and our mothers. We've left homes because of you." It's the same thing that God told Abraham to do. Leave your father's home. Leave the land of your birth. And Peter says, "We've done this for you. We've left our mother and our father, and we are following you. We've left homes and fields in order to follow you." And Messiah comes back and he gives Peter, who's speaking as the spokesperson for the whole gang, he gives them all an encouraging word that they will be restored if even just in the next age, they will be restored, and they in fact will arise to as the 12 followers to be the 12 judges that sit to judge the 12 tribes of Israel. He gives them a word of encouragement about what they've left behind. If you're sitting here, if you're following Messiah, like I'm certain you've left behind a lot of stuff. There are costs to following Yeshua, and that rich young guy who was kind of Lot-like. Couldn't pay the price. He couldn't count the cost. And so it is for us. Don't separate yourself from Messiah. Hold on. Continue to go with, as it says that Abraham had initially done with Abraham, to go with Abraham. Continue to go with, follow after Messiah. If a separation happens, take Ruth's example and make the path back up the mountain, in her case, literally, to reconnect. Be the one in your family to count that and repair the breach that's there in relationship with Messiah. I find it to be a very amazing story. How to repair where brothers used to dwell together in unity. Take the Ruth example. And see that restored. See that repaired. Avinu Malkinu, our Father, our King. I I thank you for opening up your word to us, and to showing us these kind of cool themes here in the Lot story. Thank you for teaching me. Thank you for teaching all of us. And I pray that in this negative example of Lot, as well as the positive example of Lot's great-great-great-granddaughter, that we have something that we can hold on to, that we can use as a illustration in our lives. I pray that even like Abraham and Lot and Ruth, who have left the place of their birth, and they've journeyed a long ways because of you, and they've left behind things, possessions, memories, maybe even family members, God forbid, but maybe even family members, that there is reconciliation in and hope in you, Lord. I pray that we would be encouraged. I pray that we'd be strengthened in our journey. I pray, God, that we would once again be able, as a community, to shevet yachdav, to dwell together, to be together in unity. That, like Paul writes, that we could have one mind among us, as in Philippians chapter 2, one mind among us, of unity, believing, trusting the same thing. Lord, strengthen us, build and preserve our community, our congregation. Lord, we thank you for your word that speaks life and renews and restores us. Give us hope for the journey, I pray. Amen. Amen.